Welcome to the Tictective podcast and video series, a program of the Bay Area Lyme Foundation, where our mission is to make Lyme disease easy to diagnose and simple to cure. I'm your host, Leah Gertner, Director of Education and Outreach. Lyme disease is the most common vector-borne disease in the USA and is a global issue. This show includes interviews with the researchers we fund, as well as other interesting people in the Lyme scientific community. We are a nonprofit foundation based in Silicon Valley. Thanks to a generous grant that covers all of our overhead, 100% of all donations go directly to support research and prevention programs. You can find out more or donate at bayarealyme.org. Thank you for joining the Tictective video and podcast series, Dr. Baranchuk.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Baranchuk, a native of Buenos Aires, Argentina, completed his training in internal medicine and cardiology, along with a clinical fellowship in cardiac electrophysiology. Dr. Baranchuk is a tenured professor of medicine at Queen's University in the Division of Cardiology in Ontario, Canada. He is the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Electrocardiology, as well as a member of numerous editorial boards and a reviewer for several medical journals. Dr. Baranchuk has authored 8 books and published more than 700 articles in prestigious international journals, as well as 54 book chapters, and he's presented more than 270 abstracts around the world. He is the vice president of the International Society of Holter and Non-Invasive Electrocardiology and the secretary of the Inter-American Society of Cardiology. He's also the past president of the International Society of Electrocardiology. He's been elected as a member of the Electrophysiology Leadership Section of the American College of Cardiology and is a recipient of several teaching awards, as well as being voted one of the 10 most influential Hispanics in Canada.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I am so pleased to be here with you today.
I'd like to start with a case study published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. It reads, "A fatal case of Lyme disease in a previously healthy 37-year-old man illustrates the challenges of diagnosing Lyme disease in the absence of classic symptoms. The patient originally presented to his family doctor with flu-like symptoms, including fever, sore throat, nasal congestion, and migratory joint pain. Several weeks earlier, he had been in contact with ticks but didn't recall removing one. His physician suspected a viral infection, and the patient's symptoms resolved. However, weeks later, he developed heart palpitations, shortness of breath, and chest discomfort, for which he was sent to the emergency department. Lyme disease was suspected as the ECG showed complete heart block. He was admitted to the hospital and started on treatment for Lyme carditis, but his condition, unfortunately, worsened quickly. Clinicians were unable to reverse the course of his illness, and he died. Serology results confirmed Lyme disease, and an autopsy showed Lyme carditis." So that is a really sad story. And I know that the CDC has, in the past few years, come out with more information about fatal cases of Lyme carditis. And I know that there are a lot of cases of Lyme carditis that fortunately are not fatal, but are very serious, and some that are mild. But nonetheless, it's an important thing for physicians to be on the lookout for.
First of all, approximately 3 to 5% of all people presented with Lyme disease may have the cardiovascular system involved into this condition. And it's more common when Lyme disease is not early diagnosed and properly treated with antibiotics. We call this a stage of the disease, early disseminated Lyme disease. And one of the organs that can be affected during the early disseminated Lyme disease is the heart. When that occurs, we call this Lyme carditis. So approximately, again, 3 to 5% of all that Lyme disease cases. But if you have, I don't know, 300,000 to 400,000 cases in the US, just take the number. It's a significant number of people that will have a heart infection due to Lyme disease. Now, from the group that develops Lyme carditis, approximately 9 in 10 will present with what we call a shutdown of the electrical system. It's the electricity of the heart all of the sudden gets interrupted by inflammation of the conduction system and the heart stops beating. When this condition is not rapidly recognized, can lead to fatal events as the case that you described. It's a case that got published recently along with another case from our lab, which, thanks God, the patient, who is a female, recovered nicely, but helped to illustrate that early recognition and specific action can prevent patients not only for having a disabling condition or the need of a pacemaker for the rest of their lives, but also to prevent death. So this is something that I would like to emphasize. Non-recognized Lyme disease can lead to Lyme carditis, and recognized Lyme carditis can lead to death. This is why a series of researchers in North America are working extensively to educate our peers in the early recognition of this condition, because that could help preventing long-term disability or death.
So I know the case that got published in Reader's Digest based on one of the scientific articles that you put out on the 56-year-old woman. Can you tell us a little bit about that case?
So this is a 56-year-old woman. So with that alone, she is defined as what we call an outlier. Why? Because the predominance of this condition so far in the literature is about 8 to 9 to 1 male versus female. And approximately 90% of the people presented with Lyme carditis are younger than 50 years of age. So a female, 56, is what we consider an outlier. She's outside of the well-known conditions that associate with Lyme carditis. And this is the first important message of this case, both published scientifically in CMAJ and transformed by a fantastic journalist into a more approachable case in the last volume of Reader's Digest in 2020. This lady presented first to a different hospital with a rash on her shoulder that is not the classic rash that we use to see in patients with Lyme disease called bullae, that looks like a target with a red center and then a whitish surrounding area and then another red area. So that classic picture, we learned, does not show in all patients with Lyme disease. And specifically in patients with Lyme carditis, is only present in 30 to 40% of the cases. So this lady had a quite atypical triangular rash on her left shoulder that was interpreted as cellulitis. And the patient went home treated with some corticoids. She comes back a second time, and again, the rash is not clear, now it's dissipating. She shows the rash in the phone. She explains that she is a runner and she's fit. Nobody connected dots. Patient went home on one day antibiotic, came back one more time, now feeling dizzy. So someone said, hey, rash and dizziness, why don't we do an ECG? And in the ECG, unexpectedly, you have what we call a high degree AV block, which is a partial shutdown of the electrical system. So someone rang a bell and contacted us, and we went to see her, immediately took serology, put the patient under cardiac monitoring, IV antibiotics. And from our own experience that got published several times, including a recent paper in JACC, which is a very high impact factor journal, patients can deteriorate very rapidly, but also with antibiotics IV, if they have Lyme carditis, they usually improve very quickly. So this lady that was a woman, older than 50, presenting with what we call atypical rash, even when it is more common, the atypical than the typical, we call it atypical rash. Rather than improving, in the first 5 days, the conduction system keeps deteriorating. And I was telling her, according to my experience, when you get better, if you get resolved, I will not implant a pacemaker. We will do a stress test on the treadmill before you go home to show that there is full stability of the electrical system. by day four, deterioration of the conduction system is even worse. So I go to her room and I explain to her, listen, this is not working. So now consideration for implanting a pacemaker came at the table. So I'm going to give you one or two more days, but you may need a pacemaker. The next morning is the first ECG with what we call one-to-one conduction. That means that the upper chambers of the heart contract before the lower chambers of the heart and in a one-to-one fashion. And that is evolving towards normal electricity. So we waited a couple of more days. She reassumed completely normal conduction. By day 10 to 12, we put her on a treadmill and she nailed it. Of course, she is very well trained, presented with complete stability of her conduction system. So she was discharged to complete a total of 3 weeks of antibiotics after the 10 days or 12 days here in hospital with IV antibiotics. We switched the antibiotics per month. She was seen at 4 to 6 weeks during her completely normal life. And she's coming to see us this coming week for the 1 year follow-up, as we are going after seeing her to present the first series of 8 patients with what we call long-term follow-up of properly treated Lyme carditis patients. This is a piece that it doesn't exist in the literature, because basically what we all say is we treat them, we do well, they do well, we do not need a pacemaker. But nobody tells you, well, what happens 2-3 years later? So this lady is about in a 1.5 year, she will be included in this series that we hope to be submitted soon after we check on her physical examination, ECG, et cetera, et cetera. So far, the prior 6 patients have a minimum follow-up of 1 year, maximum of 3.5, doing absolutely normal life without the requirement of a pacemaker. And Leah, the important thing here is that not 2 decades ago, 5 years ago, any of these young individuals could receive a pacemaker for the rest of their lives. And remember, I do my living implanting pacemakers, right? But I don't want any person in the world to have a pacemaker that they don't need. The tip for my colleagues is patient, usually male, active, fit, presenting with unexpected AV block, which is this shutdown of the electricity, please consider Lyme disease. Please, before implanting a pacemaker, consider Lyme carditis. So immediate serologist, initiate antibiotic treatment, and if there's no other easy detectable transient cause to create an electrical problem, please consider this, because you treat with antibiotics and this patient, after a couple of weeks, a few weeks of antibiotics, may not require to use a pacemaker for the rest of the lives. And remember that the pacemakers are batteries that we need to replace. And we do this all the time. But every time that I open the skin to replace the battery, there's a risk of 2 to 3% of a serious infection. A serious infection that sometimes requires that we remove the whole system. So with that in mind, just think, for example, my Queen student that is part of these 6 patients, 19 years of age, if I implant him with a pacemaker, this patient over the period of his life may have to go 6-7 times to battery replacements at the cost of 2 to 3% risk of serious infection every time I do that. So I have exchanged that type of life by 10 days of admission, 3 weeks total of antibiotics. So when I have the administrators telling me, Adrian, but why don't you implant the pacemaker so I can discharge this patient home? I sit down and I show them the numbers. This is what you're going to do from purely an economic point of view. I'm not even bringing that you may psychologically destroy the life of a teenager, right? By implanting a pacemaker, even when you convince them that they can do their normal life, they have a pacemaker. So we have exchanged 10 days of admission. I do recognize that there are costs associated with that for implanting a pacemaker, replacing the batteries 6 to 7 times, plus all the things that imply living with a pacemaker.
Obviously, in terms of economics, there's a bottom line there that is clearly in favor of ruling out Lyme disease, which is more common than most doctors recognize. We also have a really tragic case of one of our favorite Duke cancer and Lyme researchers who recently passed away, Dr. Neil Spector, from undiagnosed Lyme carditis, where he actually went so far as having a heart transplant. And only after his heart was removed did they figure out that there were Lyme bacteria in his heart. And so what do you think it will take to get Lyme on the differential diagnostic radar for family medicine doctors, for cardiologists, and for anyone who might encounter somebody who's having palpitations or arrhythmias or tachycardia or feeling, you know, some of the symptoms that might come along with having some kind of Lyme carditis?
What are the options for an early disseminated Lyme carditis could progress? One, it gets properly diagnosed and treated. And we have demonstrated and published several times, I insist, JACC, American Journal of Cardiology, Canadian Medical Association Journal, that if you recognize and treat, the prognosis is excellent and these people do very well. And these people do not require implanting pacemakers. So one of the options is you diagnose and you treat. In this group, what we still don't know, and our next communication is going to be the first one in literature addressing this point, is what happened in the long term of the properly treated patients. We don't know, because I can give you a huge list of conditions that get properly treated, and then you have post-treatment syndrome. And Dr. John Alcott from the Johns Hopkins is the worldwide leader in understanding this concept of long-term consequences of Lyme disease. My colleague, Dr. Phillips, along with Dana Parrish, has just recently published a book called Chronic, which I'm very interested in reading it because I want to understand all the perspectives, not only what Dr. Alcott brings me in the highest scientific level on the post-treatment Lyme disease, but also the global perspective, the perspective from a patient, the perspective from a family on what means to deal with clinical psychological deterioration and finding lots of barriers to find proper access. So again, from the three options, you get cured. My lab is working in advancing knowledge of what happened in the long term of people that got properly treated. Second group, you did not get proper diagnosis and treatment. The disease evolves very rapidly and you die. Option number three, and this is where the case of my colleague, that unfortunately passed after receiving cardiac transplantation, Neil Spector died, which is rather than falling into the 90% of Lyme carditis that will evolve with electrical problems, you have a global problem in your heart called myocarditis, or even worse, pancarditis, when the three layers of the cardiac wall are affected by Lyme. And that can produce a very sudden and rapid clinical deterioration leading to death either during the acute episode or as a consequence of complications of treatment received, including in cases like Dr. Spector, cardiac transplantation. So these are the three ways to evolve. Now, all the studies conducted by Dr. Alcott in the long-term chronic, if you want, phases of Lyme disease have not focalized on the heart and cardiovascular aspect of this condition. They know a lot about autonomic nervous system that regulates our heart rate and blood pressure. They know a lot about joints, about muscles, about mental issues, but the heart, how the heart will be targeted in the long-term chronic manifestations of Lyme disease has never been properly investigated, to the point that we do not have a specific model for that. The first animal studies are being released in the last year or two to help us understanding what are the things that can predict whether long-term cardiac consequences will occur after contracting Lyme disease. You either have an early disseminated manifestation of a cardiac electricity shutdown, mm-hmm. or you have the myo/pancreatitis. I had to assist a lady whose 17-year-old daughter died on the day of her birthday. So this mom is going to spend the rest of her life, every birthday, remembering the death of her daughter because she couldn't make it to cardiac transplantation. So it was all on the phone trying to help the doctors, but once they realized it was too late, they couldn't find the heart for her. There are gaps in knowledge.
Right.
So there could be long-term consequences of treated Lyme carditis that are not as serious as the early manifestation, but still producing palpitations, arrhythmia. There's a beautiful paper from Poland in the American Journal of Cardiology 2020 showing atrial fibrillation, which is the most common arrhythmia linked to Lyme disease. So I think they call it like Lyme disease as a risk factor of atrial fibrillation or something like that.
As you've mentioned, Lyme carditis is under-recognized, especially in many emergency departments. And patients need to visit the emergency department 2 to 3 times on average until the diagnosis is suspected. And as we have seen, failure to recognize this may result in fatalities and illness. I know that you have developed a risk stratification tool called the Suspicious Index in Lyme Carditis, and it evaluates the likelihood that a patient's high degree AV block is caused by Lyme carditis. And I was hoping that you could talk a little bit about that.
We're very happy because we see more and more publications now using the SILC score to stratify their patients and helping them to diagnose and manage these cases properly. So the first thing to be said is, as a global message, a young individual, younger than 50 years old, presenting with unexpected complete heart block or high degree AV block should raise the alarms to suspect Lyme carditis. And it should be part of the differential diagnosis if another more common transient causes of AV block are present, such as having a heart attack. Heart attack can be complicated by a complete AV block or high degree AV block, but the ECG helps a lot in showing that you're dealing with ischemia, lack of oxygen in the cardiac muscle. So then you can easily link that heart block to that heart attack and not to put Lyme disease into context. However, if there's no evident other cause for heart block, Lyme carditis should be part of your differential diagnosis. So to help healthcare providers on that is that we designed the SILC score, or Suspicious Index in Lyme Carditis. And it brings an acronym that, for people like me that love going to the movies, is easy to remember, and it's called COSTAR. So our COSTAR, the C is for constitutional symptoms. That means fever, malaise, lack of appetite, lack of energy, all those things that separately may not mean a lot. When you group them, we call them constitutional symptoms, and you receive points for having that. The O of the COSTAR is outdoor activities or endemic regions. This is people that usually expose themselves to areas where ticks are quite prevalent. The S is for sex, and as I said, male gender is 8 to 9 to 1 respect females. The T is for tick bite. Some people do recollect having a tick bite. For example, in the case of this 56-year-old lady, she said to the doctors, "I think that I had a tick bite, but I couldn't see the tick." But that should raise up the alarm. You think you had a tick, you think you remove a tick, or you did remove a tick, that is an alarm to put into the context of a high degree AV block. I could say that tick bite and high degree AV block, or typical rash and high degree AV block, equals Lyme in any part of the world. So that's the T. The A is for age less than 50 years old. And the R is for the rash, the so-called erythema migrans or bullae rash, which is present in people with lyncarditis not more than 30 to 40% of the time. But as I said, if you have the typical rash on high degree block, that's Lyme until you demonstrate otherwise. So that is the COSTAR. And the COSTAR assigns different points to the variables. When you have 3 to 7, which we call intermediate, or 7 to 12, that we call high probability of lyncarditis, is when you should take blood sample for Lyme serology and treat the patient with antibiotic, IV antibiotics, and to have the patient on a monitor system. If the slow cardiac rhythm that we call bradycardia is quite excessive and the patient is not tolerating, you may need to consider to implant a temporary pacemaker. I'm going to tell you something that we are navigating currently. There are two patients that were referred to me that during the acute phase of their electrical shutdown, they were implanted with pacemakers. Subsequently, within a week, a serology arrived positive for Lyme disease. Both of them were properly treated with more than 3 weeks of antibiotics. Remember that a pacemaker can store the information of every single beat for longer periods of time. And in the first case that I had the opportunity to see, approximately 3 months after the device insertion, the patient was using it since implant until the second day of receiving the first dose of antibiotic IV. And since then, until 3 months later that I interrogate the device in our hospital, the patient has not used the pacemaker at all. So now I have a patient that was properly treated with the right doses of antibiotic. In her particular case, this is my second woman, even the dose was larger than what the CDC recommends as the proper dose of antibiotics, okay? So we had a long discussion and I did to her all the tests that I could do to her before implanting the pacemaker. And all the tests were normal. She was able to do a treadmill with a heart rate of 168 beats per minute with 1-to-1 conduction. So we entertain a discussion of what could take to remove the pacemaker. So I'm happy to report to you that 3 weeks ago, we explanted her pacemaker. She is doing absolutely fantastic. I've been in contact with a company in the US to try to analyze the tips of those devices as to see if there is remaining of bacteria component in those cells that could be in the tip of the device. And I am seeing in the next week, the second patient with exactly the same story. So this is to reinforce to my colleagues that if you learn the silk, if you apply the silk, please think in lyncarditis to avoid having to go through all this trouble of explanting, in the best possible case, explanting the pacemaker because the patient finally got treated. Avoiding implanting the pacemaker in the first place if the patient responded well to antibiotics. So of course that this is going to open another report because to the best of my knowledge, at least in a systematic manner, by studying the heart condition of the patient before deciding the extraction, extractions for properly treated Lyme carditis have not been done before. So as soon as this is out, I will be sure to contact you so I can send you the new material.
And the testing, Lyme disease antibody testing, is far from a perfect science. So when you get all those variables in, it's a lot of uncertainty, and it sounds like there needs to be a lot more research.
I'm so happy that we have universities like, within others, of course, as Johns Hopkins, working on giving us better tools. It is a much needed field of medicine to advance a universal way of testing for Lyme, that we don't need to wait 5 to 7 days. Lyme carditis is the best example on why we need this in 24 hours, which give us a full understanding of whether A, there's persistence of bacteria, bacteria/S, because you know that there are several co-infections, persistence of bacteria in the body, and antibodies that have been developed. We need better tests, more accurate tests. We know, and this is not new. In the early 90s, there was a New England Journal of Medicine paper called Non-Serology Lyme Disease. So when you have Lyme disease, but the serologists return negative. Of course, we learned a lot of stuff since then. We learn about co-infections, but I could tell stories of patients presenting with classic Lyme carditis, improving on antibiotics, and the serologist returning negative, right? And this was in the time where I wasn't sure about Babesia, about other infections that could be producing the same thing, responding to the same antibiotic, but being negative for the serology, right? Some of those stories, rather than comic, are quite tragic, because when doctors don't see the positivity of the serology, they are reluctant to keep treating the patients for the 3 weeks that we prove to be effective for antibiotic treatment. I am very glad that finally the CDC has a segment in its Lyme disease website directed to Lyme carditis. One can argue how to format that segment of the website, but the truth it is that it is there, that the information provided is completely accurate and useful. I would love them to replicate the only existent algorithm for management of Lyme carditis that is ours, published in JACC. But they included the reference to that paper. If they contacted me, I could grant them permission for reproduction of that figure so people can see it and have a visual impact. But the fact that they are using it as their recommended lectures made me, at the personal level, very happy. But I commend the CDC for having included a segment on Lyme carditis that moves in the right direction. So with this type of attitude from NGOs, from families, from scientists, and from organizations, if we can throw bridges and work together, is where how we're going to win this condition.
Thank you so much, Dr. Barinchuk, for joining us today on the TicTacTive video and podcast series. We really appreciate what you're doing for people with Lyme carditis and various cardiac manifestations of tick-borne disease. And we're very grateful that you are an outspoken advocate. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Leah, for having me here. It was a real pleasure talking to you, and I remain to your disposal for further conversations.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the TicTacTive podcast and video series, a program of the Bay Area Lyme Foundation. You can find out more or donate at bayarealyme.org.